Here we go, hour five of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Hope you're having a great day. Woolchuck was at Shrine Bowl practice today, so that was cool. Maybe we can get some takeaways on players that have stood out as we'll get you an NFL draft big board report right here on your home of the Cowboys. If you've been with us for years, you know our draft coverage is unrivaled, led by the former Cowboys scout, the Super Bowl champion, Brian Broaddus. And, you know, it really starts at the point in the season when we know that all hope is lost. Started a little bit earlier than usual this year, but they're well on their way to, you know, another award-winning broadcast on all 3 days of our draft coverage. Now, let's get to the Shrine Bowl practice, Woolchuck. Maybe you have some names of guys that stood out to you that you have interest for from a Cowboys perspective or otherwise. CBS Sports has a couple of winners, including with Shedeur Sanders being out, Kyle McCord, a possible winner. Syracuse quarterback, been in a couple of spots, Ohio State a couple of years ago. But they say could be playing his way to early day three. You know, so I'll take your guys' thoughts on McCord. But in general, are you thinking drafting a guy and see where it could go? Are you thinking you're happy with Cooper Rush? I mean, you take Dak when Romo gets to the other side of 30 and he was just getting hurt, and you're like, well, let's take this guy and see how it develops in the coming years. And in the next preseason game Romo played, he got hurt again. So, you know, the rest is history. But are we at that point in Dak's career where it's time to look day three? Do we see a guy with traits that we like? Let's take him. Probably not going to play him as a rookie, but you never know.
I think you absolutely should always be looking at quarterback. I mean, I love the what the Packers do or did, where you're always just taking a flyer on a late round guy. Problem is, from a Cowboys perspective, unless they do change the way they operate free agency, I mean, they need every single one of these picks to possibly play, is how it seems, to fill out the rest of their roster. But yes, I mean, quarterback is the most important position. And if you can find a way to hit on a late-round guy, even if he doesn't end up being your starter, those are always very valuable trade commodities. So I'd absolutely be looking at, you know, Kyle McCord, I think, will be in that conversation. I think Cook from Missouri, who's also out there at the Shrine Bowl, Brady Cook, those probably looked like the two best guys. I was pretty impressed with North Dakota State's own Cam Miller today as well.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that all these guys had was some touch. They made different level throws, intermediate to deep. And McCord really did have himself a nice day, and he showcased some mobility out there.
So we got this East-West Shrine game going off, but they're already getting Senior Bowl measurables. Are these happening simultaneously?
Yeah, Zach's working the final practice tomorrow, game on Thursday, and then you'll have Senior Bowl game on Saturday.
Wow.
So you had a lot of...
Two totally different groups of people then?
Two totally different groups of folks. And what'll happen is, if they have some injuries or something like that happens down in Mobile, then you might see some East-West guys, you know, be on call and be ready to go if that's the case. So
do we have candidates for the 12th pick in either one of these practice or games that you're evaluating closely? Or are you more looking for day two and day three guys?
This would be more day two and day three. Yeah. I think probably the top player would be LSU corner.
Alexander?
Number 20. He's going to be wearing number 24, but Zy Alexander, probably a second-round type guy. But, yeah, there's several other defensive linemen that have been making some big plays for them. Jordan Phillips is a player that I heard a lot of really good things about today, and he showed up in practice. SMU's got a kid, Jared Harrison Hunt, number 99, good bendy edge. And there's some offensive linemen that I think looked pretty good today as well. Rutgers has a kid, Holland Pierce, offensive tackle, like 6'8", absolutely mammoth, looked pretty good. And then that center, the small school kid that I talked about a little bit earlier, who I believe...
You say he's from Salisbury? Where was he from?
52.
Newberry? Salisbury?
Middlebury.
Okay, Middlebury.
Thomas Perry. Number 62 on the East squad is somebody to watch. I mean, really good balance, anchor. Took on some guys that were really plus size against him, and he did a good job holding the zone.
Is he kind of a boxy square guy, or is he big and long?
He's boxy square.
Boxy square, okay.
So I think I'd rather go with Cooper Rush just because I don't want to draft a guy and have him be pretty good. We don't need the next Romo or Dak. Yeah. We need this Dak thing to play out with Cooper Rush as the backup. So when Dak is done, you know Cooper Rush is not our guy. And if we have a horrible season, we need to spend a top 5 pick, maybe top 10 pick at worst, on our next guy that gives you a chance to get some more of those blue chip type of difference-making traits.
You know, I wonder, guys, if, you know, we're starting to hear about Dak and the lack of mobility. Do they try and just for to have some type of a little bit different look, do they look at Trey Lance? Do you go get Trey Lance as the backup?
Well, I would love that because if Dak gets hurt early, now we could legitimately have a 3 or 4 win season. You know, I think team, and you know, you just need a guy to go out there and play just a little bit. You know,
well,
and
I didn't know Cooper Rush
wins a lot.
Yeah, I mean, Cooper Rush would probably be more like what, you know, what Dak's offense is going to be.
Yeah.
And you just wonder sometimes you don't want to have two of the same. So that's the only reason I
What kind of a feeling are you getting on free agency and how much draft needs could change by the time we get to late April? Are they going to bring back Osa? Are they going to bring back Jordan Lewis? Will defensive tackle and cornerback be settled, or are all those positions going to be?
Man, I think it's going to be honest with you, I think that this is about to be the second wave of, like last year we had a wave of guys that were gone. You know, they all end up with the Commanders. I think we're about to have the second wave of guys go.
I just wonder if when they said it's going to be another tight off season, if they meant we're not going shopping outside the building.
I don't.
But once you flip the switch on Dak's contract, you're opening up, you know, $40, $50 million under the cap.
Yeah.
All of that's not going to go to a Micah Parsons contract.
No, you hope not. And you know, Stephen Jones even said it. There's things they have to look at, you know, with the, when it comes to free agency now. So
I mean, the way that they talk
maybe
today.
Maybe the pro department, you know, can give, you know, Will and Alex Loomis and those guys over there can convince them to, hey, here's some guys that we do need to spend some money on, and they don't just go completely bottom fish. They can maybe be competitive. Maybe not day one, day two guys, but, you know, after the first wave of that thing. I'm not saying they're going to go all the way 3 weeks and, you know, without signing somebody, but maybe let the initial wave go and then try and sign. But there's so much interest in signing their own. I mean, it makes it hard because they are there. They now, are they over-evaluating their own? I think the problem is, though, those second contracts, they've missed on a couple of those guys.
Missed on a lot of those dudes.
And it's hurt.
The things they said today about competing now, though, I just don't know how you could seriously say that with a straight face if you didn't think we're at least going to bring back some of these guys. Because if it's a repeat of next year where every rotation player of significance
is gone, yeah,
then you can ship it. It's 6-11 next year.
Oh, no, that's I've said this a couple of different times on platforms I've been on this. There's a chance this team is going to be worse than it was this year.
Yeah.
Just because they're not going to be able to have enough. They're not going to be able to get enough players.
To
replace all the depth that they lost a ton of depth last year, and they're probably going to lose a lot of depth this year. And, you know, if you start to lose 12, 15 players that were a big part of what you've done the last couple of years, yeah, you can't replace all those guys. I mean, you know, Span Ford is not going to be as good as, you know, I mean, it's just not going to happen.
Especially with Overshown and Diggs, you know, out for a while. Okay, Draft Network with a mock about 18 hours ago. We're going to go for another one for McMillan, who I get the feeling you guys do not believe will actually be there at 12.
Man, I didn't think that CeeDee Lamb would be there at 17, but hey, if the draft gods smile on you and McMillan gets to 12, you need to hand that card in.
Where do y'all have him in your top 10, like, of overall players?
He's like top four.
Fourth best player.
On my board, yeah.
He's right behind Genty. Yeah.
Isn't this a must best player available type of deal?
Well, I think just because of the questions you're going to have, there's so much uncertainty at certain positions, at least in that pick at 12. I'm trying to get the best player, the healthiest player, and the kid that has no holes in him character-wise off the field. I'm trying to get that because if I get that, then I can gamble on some of the others. I can gamble in the second. I can gamble in the third. I need to find a way to get back in on the fourth. I might have to trade back in the first. But there's just a lot of uncertainty, especially if you're looking for these offensive linemen right now.
Okay, that's what I'm doing. We go to FanSided. They have a 3-rounder for you.
Yeah.
I would love it, you know, just on paper and what I know now, if Kelvin Banks at 12 is the pick and play him at right guard, maybe see what he could do at left tackle if Guyton doesn't play better. You know, I would like him better than Udoga out there as a backup left tackle. But I like the idea of of getting a good, big, strong guy at right guard that can help it, open up this running game, Brian. What would be wrong with that pick?
You know, I mean, that's some say. Zach, have you watched Banks here late? Have you watched
like
some of these
recently? Because we watched him pretty early.
Yeah, on. Circle back on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And one thing that I've heard a knock on him is some toughness.
Yeah.
He might have some of those same questions that Guyton had in terms of, like, you need to learn to play. Like, there's a difference between being hurt and being injured, that kind of thing. And here's the issue with taking a guy. He's been a left-side player his entire career. Now you want him to go to the right side. Some guys, you can make that transition seamless. But others, that's a big-time challenge to go from the left to the right. So I love the idea on paper, make him a right guard, but I don't know if he will make that transition as seamlessly as we'd like him to.
I just, to me, I went from feeling really good about him with some of the early tape, and then I started watching like the late, see like the, you know, there's some games he got hurt in.
He struggled against Georgia in both games.
Yeah, and well, then you look at that, and then you look at the playoff games and stuff, and he was on the ground, he was out of balance, his feet get out of whack anyway. And you're wondering about that, you know.
Well, we don't need more projects there.
See,
you know?
That's what I'm saying. I'm trying to sit here and kind of try and navigate this thing where all of a sudden, like, to me, if Dr. Cooper tells me that Josh Simmons, the Ohio State tackle, his knee is fine, I have no problem picking him and moving on. I think you'll be fine.
All right.
I think you'll be fine. But
you know,
like
that's
you say,
probably why Daniel Jeremiah's got Booker so high.
Yeah.
Because that's a guy you look at, and that is a plug-and-play guard that I'd feel like day one is going to start for you and be pretty good. I just don't have him that high in the stack. So, like, are you reaching and not taking BPA or filling a need? But I do think Booker will be a
good
player.
I got him in the second round.
Same.
But, see, that's what I'm saying. Second-round player to me very well could be player 16,
18, 17.
Yeah. Could be, yeah, that's exactly right.
If you get that at 44, that'd be amazing. But FanSided does Cam Scataboo at 44. I know you guys are going to think that's too early.
That's way too early.
Yeah, that's a little bit early for me, especially if guys like, say, Johnson from Iowa or Hampton from North Carolina, Henderson from Ohio State, I even like Sampson from Tennessee. This running back draft, it could carry this thing down into the fifth round if you really, really look hard at it.
Okay, and then the third round, I wanted to get your thoughts just in general on this position, but LSU edge Savion Jones. They have Sam Williams. They have Marshawn Nealon. Do we want to use the third pick going after a kind of a long shot edge at that point, or do you really like the player, Brian?
I'll tell you what, I think I would probably go another direction there. I mean, there's a kid, Birch, from Oregon, that I like pretty well. Barron from Miami, I like pretty well. Ivy from Ole Miss. I think there's, you know, there's going to be some talk about potentially where does Jackson from Arkansas, where does he go in this thing? I think Sawyers from Ohio State has moved himself up pretty high. So you've got a group of, like, say, some bendy guys and then the non-bendy guys that are more like what John Owning was telling us earlier, left edge run defenders. Those guys that I kind of named, are more of those types of players. Ohio State's got a couple of kids that are mm-hmm. that way that can really play the run well.
I love JTT, man. Yeah. I don't think he's getting enough love during this process.
No, there's no question about that.
Okay, let's stay at Oregon here as we jump over to SI.com, a story of Tez Johnson, who's getting measured at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah, he's tiny.
5'9", 156.
Yeah, he is a...
With small hands.
Yeah.
8.4. He's currently projected as a third-round pick. Would you be downgrading for this one, Brian?
Yeah, I think that you really... This is... Man, you could watch him on tape, and he is a fun player, and he's... As far as... He's got those kind of... This is who he reminds me of. You guys will know this player. You know the Rams have a player named Tutu Atwell?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is Tutu Atwell is who this is. That little bitty, kind of shifty move guy, keep him on the run, throw him screens, throw it underneath, let him run. Stuff going down the field, it's going to have to be just explosive run by you guy. But, man, I don't know. I mean, like I say, he is a tiny guy, but he is explosive when you watch him play.
Well, you know, I like explosion. I don't have any problem with smaller guys. If you've proven you can take the hits and get thrown to the ground by 300-pound dudes.
Okay, if you can't afford, if you can't afford our returner,
Turpin. Yeah, it's a good Turpin replacement.
This is a replacement for our Turpin, right? Same guy, same type of player. But you got to Turpin's in a situation where he has to get tendered, you know, like he has to get an offer, a qualifying offer. So we'll see if the offer comes and if that's the case.
I mean, best kick returner in the game right now and a pretty good weapon to have on offense as well. I wonder how the Cowboys look at that value with Kevontae Turpin with the new rules and everything. I'd hate to see him go. It's been great having him on the team, but I know there's such a business element to it. And there's only so much pie. Okay, we started the show today in the wake of a Cowboys press conference to introduce Brian Schottenheimer. There were so many takeaways from it. Jerry Jones said he'd had conversations with Jason Witten, but not about being on the Cowboys coaching staff. So do we put that story to bed right now? Is Jason Witten not going to be a member of the coaching staff? I guess it would make sense. One of his sons is 15 or 16. The other one's 17 or 18. Yeah. So maybe you ride that thing out. Maybe you follow them in college and then – you know, you go look at your NFL coaching career after that, if he wants it. Jerry said that he and Deion did talk, but that Deion Sanders already has a job. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how much of a strong consideration that is. Schottenheimer on Dak. He's going to play elite level football. He's going to lead us to championships. We got the right guy. We're going to win. We're going to win a championship. That sounds about as delusional as some of the things Micah Parsons has been saying. I kind of expect that from a head coach when you're taking your job, especially your first job. You're full of optimism. Yeah. And, you know, some of that is expected of you to bring that in, but it just seemed tone deaf.
Yeah, but if it doesn't happen, then, you know, he's going to get fired. So, I mean, you got to be enthusiastic. And that's the one thing this guy is. He's very enthusiastic about the possibility. And you know, I mean, like I say, if he's half as good as his dad, that's 100 wins right there. His dad won 200 games in the NFL. If he's half as good as his dad, I think we'd be okay with that.
Would that be negative Super Bowls? How does that work?
What's that?
How does the math work if you're half as good as zero championships?
No, I'm just talking about wins, though.
I mean, I'm just busting your balls.
Oh, I know. Divisional round, I guess. No, his dad struggled in the playoffs. There was no question about that.
The ball bounced some weird ways.
They had some opportunities. They had teams that were better, and they just didn't get it done. You know, you talk about run the ball with LaDainian Tomlinson, the way he used to do that stuff.
That 14-2 Chargers team was awesome.
Holy jeez.
They were a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess Marty was more of a handsome guy early in his coaching career. I remember him late.
I told you, Dawson, bro.
What do you think about the son? Do you think the son got the looks, or do you think?
Dawson.
I mean, I guess I picked it up mid-thought. I was going to make the point that Brian looks nothing like Marty.
His dad had bad glasses. We all had bad glasses.
In the 80s?
In the 80s. We all had really bad wireframe thick glasses, and they were it was bad.
Yeah, I love your Super Bowl championship picture with your glasses.
We had some really bad.
You got the mom's looks.
That's young Marty.
Yeah.
Yeah, young Marty.
It looks nothing
smile.
Like Brian.
Yeah.
You
should look at Liam Cohen, the Jets.
Which one's the handsome one, though, you said?
I mean, I guess both of them are kind of handsome,
but Marty slightly more.
I don't know who you would grade higher, Marty or Brian. I just wouldn't guess it. Like Steve Belichick, you look at him, you're like, oh yeah, there's Bill's son, right?
He does a lot of weird stuff.
Bill's son is over there. Which one is it? I'd point at Steve.
The guy with his tongue out.
You tell me Marty Schottenheimer's kid is over there, I'd be looking all day long.
You think they're both solid
That's
sevens,
crazy.
Though, at least, right?
That is crazy, bro.
I guess. Yeah, probably.
I'm with you, though. When I look at him and I don't see Marty in the face. And perhaps Mrs. Schottenheimer's jeans just stood a little bit taller.
I mean, my daughters look more than me, like me, than Brian looks like Marty, if you ask me. You know, I'm not saying. I'm just wondering. You know?
Yeah. No, it's a fair question.
Okay, sports hodgepodge coming up next, Chief. Where are you taking us?
We'll probably sink into more of this conversation here.
It's got depth to it.
I just sent you Liam Cohen, so I need a scouting report on him when we get back.
Give me a picture of his dad, too.
He seems like a knee biter is what they're saying.
Yeah, Liam Cohen looks like a strange guy.
He's a goober, man. He's doing the Duval stuff at the mic.
He's got an unnecessary comb over, too. He's got plenty of hair, but he's still choosing to go comb over.
Yeah.
He wants to be 70.
Well, we have some great trash talk from the football weekend. And how should the Cowboys feel about this?
817 says, just because of that wire glasses comment, I'm not driving without my glasses on. Sounds like a gentleman that hasn't gotten a new set for maybe 30 or 40 years, but maybe they're back in. You know, a lot of that stuff from the 80s is back in. I see the wide-legged jeans from the early 90s back.
Oh, the JNCO jeans.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're wearing JNCO jeans out here.
Kids are going
and
off.
And committing crimes in them.
Yeah. I was a big JNCO guy. Cool, huh?
Segments brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today, carsforkids.org. It's brought to you by the Frankels. Life's unpredictable. Accidents happen. If you or a loved one's injured in a car truck wreck, call the Frankels. Get a free consultation, 214 or 817-333-3333. Jump online at frankelfirm.com. Here's the chief.
Okay, I'm just seeing this is sort of some breaking culinary news, but starting tomorrow at 6 a.m., from 6 a.m. to 11 a.m., you can pull up to participating Whataburger locations, which I'm hoping is all of them, pop through the drive-thru, purchase nothing, and still get a free honey butter chicken biscotte. So, I mean, if that's not
one per person,
news.
Honey butter chicken biscuit, hell yes.
Going to be a long line in the morning.
Whataburger, longer than usual, giving away free chicken biscuits.
Their GFL birthday special.
Seriously, dude, I'd like to think they were doing this in my honor for my birthday. That's fantastic. All right, that's good news. Whataburger, free honey butter chicken biscuits, 6 a.m. to 11 a.m. tomorrow. Let's party. Okay, how do you think the Cowboys feel about this? Or how should we feel about this just in general? Because a couple of things that I noticed from the cream of the crop teams that we've just been watching over the course of the last week or so. One of them is that all four quarterbacks in the final four, Hurts, Daniels, Allen, Mahomes, they were your top four most efficient scramblers on the season.
Wow.
So
we're doomed.
Yeah, I mean, watching this postseason, I think it was very clear. If you don't have a quarterback that can move around, and when I say mobile, it's not Michael Vick, Lamar Jackson. It's they can steal a first down here and there with your legs. Like Joe Burrow, I would consider a mobile quarterback. Hell, he had a 47-yard touchdown run against the Giants on Monday Night Football. If you don't have an ability to use your legs at all, you're probably behind the eight ball in the NFL. You're not going to have a really good chance to win games.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a huge cheat code. I mean, even Lamar Jackson from a scrambling efficiency standpoint, he wasn't in the top four, but he was sixth. And then with a smaller sample size, Drake May was actually fifth. But the top four most efficient scramblers, this is you drop back to pass, you don't like what you see, and you decide on your own accord to take off and run. Your most efficient scramblers in the sport were Daniels, Mahomes, Allen, and Hurts.
Man, looking at all 14 teams that made it, I don't know of how many scramblers Dak is better than. You know?
Well, I can tell you from an efficiency standpoint this year, he was Golf. Only better than Flacco, Cousins, Rush, and Derek Carr.
Wow.
Now, that's one of those guys in Derek Carr who like had some really nice numbers throughout the season, and he's not a mobile guy.
Then he
and
got hurt,
Clint Kubiak was able to get plenty of out of him before their offense just started getting, you know, riddled with injuries. Yeah. And now Kubiak's actually going to Seattle to be their OC. So I think that's probably a pretty strong hire there for Mike McDonald. They needed a little something.
Man, that really
on.
Puts the picture in the frame, doesn't it, as far as how tough Dak is right now at running the ball. Or he's just not going to do it if Goff's more efficient.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you got Aiden O'Connell, Mac Jones, Daniel Jones, Stafford, more efficient on their scrambles. Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, and there's Goff, Winston, Tua. I mean, these are all the guys. Now, of course, Dak's sample is much smaller because he didn't play that much, but still, these are efficiency numbers. When he was scrambling for the time that he was playing, it was the fifth least efficient scramble in the sport.
Oh, we got a new special teams coordinator.
Okay. Well, speaking of breaking news, we go from Whataburger, great news, 6 a.m. to 11 a.m. tomorrow, free Whataburger, honey butter chicken biscuit. Walchuk's got that look in his eye like he doesn't know if he's happy or sad.
I don't
or
know.
If
I
he's
really
pissed
don't know.
Or angry.
They hired Nick Sorensen, who was just fired by the 49ers. So, I mean, hey, maybe he ends up being great. But he's
one man's trash. Hey, one man's trash.
He was a D.C. there, wasn't he? San Francisco?
Yes, he was. He has a special teams experience most recently with the Jags in 2021. Mm. Last season was with the 49ers as their offensive coordinator, hired as the Cowboys special teams coordinator, according to Tom Pelissero, Nick Sorensen.
Well, I guess we need to do a dive on, I mean, if he went from special teams coach to defensive coordinator, he must have done some things to impress along the special teams way to get the call up to DC, you would think, Granted, they were kind of in a pinch there with their DC stuff.
Let me do some searching.
You know what?
There we do. Gang of Seven, this bad boy.
Hell of a hire.
Gang of Seven, this thing up.
I'm signed.
I'll be back with you.
I'm giving approval for this. This is amazing. I'm so pumped.
See, there's the positive Walchuk.
Hell yeah.
I love missed
you,
him.
I love what
this
you
shoddy
do.
Staff is looking real, I'm real good.
Putting together a nice safety staff. For 10 years. I mean, longtime player. Played for a decade.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
College football, VaTech in the late 90s.
Hokie. Well, hey, Beamer ball. That special teams
Super
ball right
36 with the Rams. So,
assistant special teams coach for Seattle. They had a
great resume.
Special teams in 2013.
I'll never forget those special teams in 2013.
Really good units, right?
When they were talking about the Legion of Boom, that's really what they were talking about.
Blocking
with
a lot of kicks,
teams.
I think. I think that was Cam Chancellor just like leaping over people.
We're a Cam Chancellor away, potentially, from double-digit wins.
I'm all about
season.
It, boys.
Oh, we're hiring friends. Special teams coach with the Seahawks 2013 to 2016. Yeah, so that's how they have their tie. That's the shoddy tie right there.
Yeah, I got to bring in a couple of my friends here, if you don't mind.
It's important. Oh. I like working with my friends.
What'd you say? Oh, what happened?
I hate when they do that, though.
I don't think they are friends.
I think they were actually big-time enemies in that facility.
Shoddy was only there from 2018 to 2020. They didn't overlap.
Oh, okay.
Right, so we're good. We're good. Woo.
Yeah.
But they might have been together.
Well, he coached the secondary there.
They were together in Jacksonville in 2021.
What are we doing?
So are they friends or not? I mean, what's the deal here? Okay, so here's the deal. He was the assistant special teams coach with the Seahawks 13 to 16 and then secondary coach from 17 to 20. So not only was there overlap there, they linked up in Jacksonville as well. They're proper bros. This better go well.
Yeah, they're proper bros. You're right. Yeah. They're proper bros.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's...
This better go well.
That's awesome, man. Did you see Butter talking about old Bones trying to trade for him?
I'm going to trade for you, son. I'm good. No, trust me.
Bones would be willing to trade the number one overall pick in the gosh dang draft. The Titans have it. He's probably talking with their general manager right now about, hey,
what's that
this kicker's the real deal.
You guys interested in moving for a two?
Yes, I am. We've talked about this. I am interested in this.
Tennessee's got a high two.
Yeah, I'll take that Tennessee two.
You're talking about the best kicker in league history.
Got a high two.
On a team with red zone issues.
The number one pick in the draft.
I too.
We'll just see if Schottenheimer has the same McCarthy thing where he doesn't mind bogging down at midfield offensively because he knows he's got the guaranteed three in his back pocket. He loves a 60-plus yard field goal. I hope Shotty doesn't.
Okay, give me a very high two. And I could probably
this is the highest possible. This is pick 33, maybe the 33rd team.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, we got Dawson on board with confidence as well.
We got more soccer players in North Texas.
All right. And then when this thing starts going south, they're missing field goals. Dawson's, what the? It just starts losing it.
I mean, they don't have a good track record with their second round picks. You know?
That's why you need two darts.
That's why you need two.
Take one of these serious.
The other thing to consider, and I mean, I'm going to be kind of on this Jahdae Barron train for a while until someone boots me off it. Maybe Eberflus just doesn't like the cut of his jib, but. You see here that the Eagles and the Chiefs are both in the top five when it comes to coverage grade defensively this season. So I think that's something that's pretty important. Baltimore was right there. Now, the outlier was the Commanders and the Bills being two teams that did not score high in coverage grades this year but were still able to get to the promised land. And listen, if you have a Jaden Daniels or Josh Allen at quarterback, you can be the outlier on some things. Do we have that here?
No,
we do not. Okay, confirmed. So
says who?
Chiefs and Eagles meeting in the Super Bowl both had really solid pass rush grades as well. And the Cowboys were, from a Pro Football Focus pass rush grade standpoint, they had the Cowboys as fourth in the sport behind Pittsburgh, Philly, Cleveland, and then there's Dallas. Mm-hmm. So the pass rush stuff you have, but Dallas was below average in the coverage grade stuff. Yeah. And you see two of your Super Bowl teams now, they are both in the top five, Philly being number one in coverage grade. So the need
two
for
rookies, man.
Diggs being the status that he's in, Kalen Carson not having a great year one, not to say that he's a bust, but it wasn't overly promising. You have Deron Bland in a contract year. Jordan Lewis is a free agent.
Josh Butler's coming back from an ACL.
Barron's the corner from UT, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He could be the best player on the board when he gets to 12.
No, I heard from a scout that to think of him at 12 was a little laughable. That's a little high. But
oh, really?
I do like him enough to be interested there. but I don't know that the rest that the Cowboys would necessarily see.
I feel like you guys might be downgrading every player to further justify taking Jenty at 12.
Not true.
Trust the process of drafting a running back at 12.
Just kind of the class we're looking at, unfortunately.
I tell you what, I have this kid, Morrison, the corner from Notre Dame, who is a hell of a player. He got knocked out with a hip injury. I was told just recently, like 2 days ago, this is his second hip surgery. That's a first-round grade I have on a kid. He plays that way. You start to hear this stuff about these. Like, you're watching the tape, you're like, okay, film tells you this, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, this happened, or this happened, or this happened. So this is a tough part of it right now. You try and keep the guys where they're at, but no, I'm interested in getting the best player there. But I absolutely love Barron.
I like the versatility he's got.
I do too.
Yeah, well, just in general, something to consider for the draft. A giant need for. And again, when Eberflus comes in and we get more of an understanding, maybe Broaddus, you already know more off the top of your head of like what his sort of archetype is for corner, height, weight, speed, all that kind of stuff, yeah. The way that he likes to play. And we can start kind of attaching prospects to that a little bit more. But that's going to be a spot that you're going to have to hammer at some point here.
Man, I love that about 3 minutes ago you asked me the question, do we have the difference maker like Washington and Buffalo does? And I said no. And it used to be for years you would say something like that, or I would say something like that, and the text would light up with people calling me an idiot. Everybody just accepts it now. You know,
yes.
We don't have the difference maker. Dak Prescott is not a real MVP candidate. He is a player that the offense can be so good, then the numbers will get compiled that maybe he is in the conversation and getting votes for it. But there's not a groundswell of the Dak supporters. Like, they've all sort of capitulated and said, man, I guess you guys were right all along.
There you go. I mean, the fan base, the front office, it's taken nine. The front office still hasn't really figured it out. No, maybe they have behind the scenes when it comes to them understanding that he's immobile. But we should have known that before we handed him the $260 million contract. It wasn't like we found out in Atlanta that he couldn't run anymore.
I mean, I knew it before the 160. You're looking at that injury. He's never going to be the same again. They're like market setting. And 4 years later, he's been hurt. He's been unable to push you through another market-setting contract. I mean, congratulations to Dak. You know, it's been a great career, but now we really need to get serious about giving him the kind of protection and support that he needs to hopefully make him a winner. You know, it's still doable. I think he's good enough that if you built the perfect team, you'd probably still get to the conference championship game.
Did you guys see the trash talk of the weekend from Eagles safety C.J. Gardner-Johnson?
He's always talking. What did he say?
He said, Jaden McDaniels, hell of a year, but sit your ass down and watch this be from home, Cancun University. That's what he just hit Jaden Daniels with. He called him McDaniels. This is bulletin board material. I don't even know if C.J. Gardner-Johnson is going to be back with the Eagles next year, so he might just be doing the thing where he can distance himself and not really have to... You know, pay the piper on this one, but
he's trying to show Philly his bona fides that no, I know what time it is. I can get involved in this trash talk. That just seems like so weird. You know, if you're like an obnoxious rookie or somebody that's been in their face to start trash talking like that, but I just don't know where that would come from.
Yeah.
Toxic Tuesday.
C.J. Gardner-Johnson is just that wild animal. He's 100% that guy. He was ejected from a game this year, right? For something he said. Yeah. You almost never see that, where you said something so egregious that it's like, dude, we got to actually get you out of here. I don't think we've done the reporting on that either. We're going to have to get that scoop when we go to the Super Bowl and start rubbing elbows with some filthy Eagles. Like, what did Gardner-Johnson say that was so bad that they felt like he needed to be booted from the game?
So I was wondering, Saturday night I was coaching. The opposing coach got red carded in the first minute of the game. He was yelling at the ref.
And you didn't think you were doing enough, did you?
The sideline assistant came running over. He turned and said like 3 seconds of stuff to him in Spanish. The next thing you know, all hell broke loose and he was out of there. Like, what the hell?
That's incredible, dude.
Yeah.
Okay, I did want to share this with you. I saw from Tyler Dunn, who was actually on with Will and CA this weekend. It was a great conversation. And he chatted with Bill's guard, Osiris Torrance, about the decisive 4th-and-5 play where Kincaid ends up dropping it. Mm-hmm. And Spags was just totally in his bag. All game, Spagnuolo showed this particular pressure and backed off. Yeah. Every time. Typically sent heat where the Chiefs weren't showing it pre-snap. So all game long, he's showing something.
Like,
and
the cat blitz, corner blitz?
Yeah, this is the exact play that we're talking about here, fourth and five, and they blitz the corner. And so that's why the Bills slid their protection left, because
they didn't bring it the whole night.
They were never bringing it from where they were showing it. They were either dropping everybody or dropping those guys that looked like they were coming and bringing somebody else from the other side. So they the quote here from the lineman of the Bills says, they set it up. It was like they were waiting to get in that situation all game to bring out that one pressure. And so it's like, so what can you even do? And he admitted, like, studying tendencies versus a Spagnuolo defense only helps to a point. He says Spags hides it pretty well, so it's hard to pinpoint one specific area to get better at, because the D-line is moving, the linebackers are communicating, the safeties are coming, the corner's blitzing. So they're all moving around. It's not like you just pinpoint one specific area and try to hold up. He says, and then you got Chris Jones up front. I feel like with a guy like Chris Jones playing against him four times now, it makes it a lot easier to call defense, because the offensive line has to respect where he's at. And if he's on one end, you'll likely could bring it to the other side. But if they don't come, now you've got him one-on-one. So it's basically like a pick your poison. Spags has his tendencies. You're trying to combat that. And then he's always got something. That's something that stood out so big in last night's game on both sides of the ball. It's third and nine offensively. You absolutely have to have a first down to kill this game right now. Andy Reid's got the play. Spags, fourth and five. This is the moment. All the marbles, do or die. Spags ain't dying.
You know, I do wonder what an elite, like, processing quarterback could do. Josh Allen, maybe not elite at processing. He makes up for it with his athleticism, with a great arm. But as that whole thing is breaking down, he runs into the pressure. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, he's got immediate to his face, basically.
Yeah.
And he thinks it's coming from the other side.
Yes. So, you know, I don't know, you know, but with that athleticism, I would love to see that play restarted if he had bailed out the left and tried to loop it around instead of running into two other guys. And, you know, if you'd been around, you know, like Brady or Manning or something like that, and you're in your 30s or Mahomes, you know, what would he do there? And, you know,
that'd be a fun conversation to have.
Great pressure makes Hall of Famers look like average Joes, and I think that was another classic situation of that. 972 says, Gavin, great career with Dak. What the hell has he done? Never made it past the divisional round. Dak's a bum. I just, you know, he made $500 million as a fourth-round pick. I would say he's done it. 580, Gavin, you're still an idiot, though, but I agree with you. Just kidding. You've been right for 5 years. You know, and those are the most passionate texts that we got here from that little conversation around Dak Prescott. I guess he'll have a big bounce back year, and a lot of his most loyal fans are willing to ride again. But I just think with the lack of him being able to run at all right now, you essentially drafted a running quarterback. You were making the most of it. Then he got injured to the point that he can't run anymore, and he's the top paid quarterback in the game. So thanks for that one, Jerry. We're back to Cross with the Fan After Dark. See what Fred and Blake have cooking with you next right here. It's the G-Back Nation, the Fan. Yes, sir. Thank you, Lucius. Tomorrow we're going to be on the road. Thanks to Stella Artois once again. Our friends at Brass Tap in Rockwall will be hosting. We'd love to see you out there if you are on the far east side. That's over by my neck of the woods. Kind of a home game for me, about 15-minute drive or so. As we get set now for the Fan After Dark, Fred and Blake. And a good evening, gentlemen. How you doing?
Stupendous. Absolutely stupendous. I mean,
you should after a 4-day weekend.
Hey, saw the boy, got some, you know, he played really good basketball for 3 days. I mean, and you guys all have kids. There's nothing more fulfilling as a parent than watching your children do well.
Yeah.
And that, and for my son, who's about as hard-headed as I am, to watch him do something, I gave him a few pointers the first game, and to watch him actually put it into practice in real time.
Wow.
Coachable.
Woo! And which he wasn't for the longest time. Right? I mean, and we were all teenage boys at one time, but to see him actually listen to his dad versus the way the trip I had last time, not great. This time around, my son was locked in. We had a lot of father-son bonding time. Last time, you guys heard about that AFC Championship game last night, too?
Yeah, I did.
Right?
Not a lot of people talking about it.
I get it. But like I told you, though, the devastating for me this weekend was that KU game. That just, I'm still.
Heartbreaker.
Yeah, Chris Jones tears.
Man. And he cried a lot.
My boy was
he?
Crying the whole game.
He cried
a lot. Is there a local story on what that's all about?
I have no idea. I'm gonna ask Andy
Reid at Radio Row.
Please do, because that was. I'm wondering if he's just like the totality of the moment, right? The fact that they're on the verge of something truly historic. So maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
So what are we looking at with your kid? 5'10" point guard.
He's a 6'1", 180, kind of a small forward, you know, and I mean, he's a 3-and-D guy, I guess, okay, is what you would call him. But he's in a small Kansas school right now, so he plays both inside and outside, right? He's a little bit of a banger, and I told him, I said, just, you know, shoot the ball more. So nice. We'll see what happens. I mean, look, they're ranked in their class. They got this 6'5" kid who's pretty dadgum good. They got a lefty freshman who's just nasty from outside. So I told him, I said, look, you got to be that third guy.
There you go.
You got to be that third guy. So we'll see what happens. We'll see.
Blake, how was your weekend?
Busy. I was up here at the station for most of it, hanging out with James Tritely and CA while Fred was out in Kansas. So getting all those fun guests, breaking the news, and then enjoying my Sunday. Went to church and then watched some football all day. So,
you know, relaxing. So I joined your show on Saturday.
You did?
I was in the parking lot of an urgent care center.
I heard you talking about that.
Wife's got the worst flu of her life, and I'm thinking it should be over by Sunday. Nope. All day yesterday, still in bed. Yeah. All day today, still. This is day three of, like, the worst flu, I think, in the history of America.
I've had the flu, it feels like, for about the last 30 days. So
that's great news.
I'm still got mucus.
Glad we just embraced the way we did.
And I think it's really much like if you're next to someone, you can pass
flu?
It.
Like I know the we've swine been. Flu?
It's could be bird flu, Blake flu.
How many flus new? Are there? How so many Blake flus are there?
There's swine flu.
Blake flu.
But I'm saying, are those active? Can you get swine flu?
I don't know.
I think that's passed. I think that passed.
Yeah, passed. Ask the people from the Eagles tailgate this weekend.
Mm. Great question.
You just don't want the chicken flu, I think, is the bad. What's coming up on the show tonight, gentlemen?
As Freddie D. Davis, I told him I prepped the last 4 days, so I said it's all on him for prep.
Wow.
I tell you what.
All on prep.
Obviously, we're going to, you know, look, I may be
all
one of the
Chiefs
few...
all the time.
No. We've got one segment dedicated to the AFC recap from last night.
Hey, they deserve it.
And by the way, I feel like I've done a pretty good job of not saying anything, just putting that out there. But no, I'm cautiously optimistic about Brian Schottenheimer, the front office. That's another question. We got our boy Corey Chavis coming on. We'll talk a little bit about the game, the Brian Schottenheimer stuff, but he just left the East-West Shrine
Is
Bowl.
Is he still doing a lot in scouting?
He's doing that draft net. He's doing draftnasty.com.
When he was playing, he was a really good evaluator.
Yes. Yeah. You know, and so he'll rattle off some stuff. In fact, I know, you, like I said, if you ever need anybody as far as, because I'll tell you what, the thing about him is he'll rattle off dudes.
Oh, no. He
from like the fifth, sixth round, you're like,
when he was playing,
okay.
He was talking about a lot of guys.
What time for Corey?
7:40. So, like I said, he's in Mobile, Alabama. So we'll talk about not so much what the 12th pick, you know, because again, that's, you know, you can get that stuff anywhere. But as far as like, he can give us a deep dive on the 3rd, 4th, and 5th. Wait, I forgot, we don't have a 4th.
No, ask him about how he's got his offensive lineman graded, how Beautiful. He sees that group.
I'll absolutely do that.
Yeah, at the top guys, please.
Okay, perfect.
Here they come, Fred and Blake, the Fan After Dark, 7 to 11. Thanks to Lucius Alexander and the Pimp Cup over there at Master Control here, 75 and Fitzhugh. Thanks to Woolchuck and Chia following. Brought us till tomorrow at 2. We're live at the Brass Tap in Rockwall. You're going home with the nation. At ease.